Tonight on Arena, Victoria Smurford on Gilly Cooper's Rivals and reviews of The Office Australia and Season 2 of Shrinking. And amongst our albums tonight, Tension 2 from Kylie. Five 1551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena and you can watch us on rte.ie/arena. Today, Disney Plus launched their new drama series, Rivals, which was adapted from Gilly Cooper's best-selling book of the same name, which was published back in 1988. It is set in the fictional English county of Rutshire, I kid you not, and it's filled with boardroom rows, bedroom shenanigans and a plot about a womanising MP called Rupert Campbell Black, played by Alex Hassel, who is trying to steal the Corinium TV station from Lord Tony Baddingham, played by David Tennant. Our reviewers, Jen and Chris, will be with us shortly to give us their verdict on the series. But before that, I met Victoria Smurford, who plays Maud O'Hara. He's married to Declan, the TV talk show star in Rivals, who is played by Aidan Turner. We talked about what the viewer can expect of the Bunkbuster adaptation. But before we hear from Victoria, let us hear a clip of Declan, Aidan Turner, as I said, playing the part here, turning on the Deputy Prime Minister of the day, played by Rufus Jones, and this is in a TV interview.
Mr. Stratton, yourself and Mrs. Stratton have been married, what, 15 years?
15 in April.
Yes. Three children, a wife, a mistress, and an all-consuming job. It must be difficult to juggle everything.
Although your wife, Winifred, has been staying at her family's Pimlico apartment, which must have made it easier for you to spend time with your 29-year-old secretary, Miss Sarah Price, who proudly told our researchers that you have the girth and stamina to compete with any championship racehorse. Is that a fair comment to make, sir?
Cut!
I would look to your own glass house, Deputy Prime Minister, before you start throwing rocks at others.
So, Declan, if we could just do another take without the slant.
Fuck off, Alistair!
Victoria, you read Gilly Cooper's Rivals back in the 1980s and 90s. Who let you do that?
Well, Mum didn't know. But if Mum's going to read something and hoot with that much laughter, I'm a curious human. I needed to find out. But also, it was read at the most perfect time because we just moved as an Irish family to England. And so it was like an instruction manual because suddenly I'm at a school in Ascot with all these, you know. So you had the hierarchy, the English status. You had how people interact with each other and then firebomb in an Irish family. And it was basically what I was living.
Which is exactly the situation that your character, Maud O'Hara, and Declan O'Hara, played by the wonderful Aidan Turner, that's the situation they find themselves in. Yeah. Two teenage daughters, slightly older son. You kind of would have been in exactly the position of those daughters.
Yeah, I genuinely was. And it's quite funny how life has these funny circles, because I would sit and say to Mum, like, one day I'm going to marry Declan. Just Declan's the most amazing. She goes, I'm going to marry Declan. So, Mum, I married Declan. His
name's
Aidan.
You got there. But did you? You're saying that even at that, as a teenager, you weren't associating with the character of Taggy or Caitlin that we might think. It was actually Maud, even at that point.
Yeah, because I just loved her. She had such a sense in the book, and hopefully, you know, brought it to screen. That sense of, no, I'm going to do it my way. And I'm not going to stick to the rules. And she just, you know, Mum used to say, well, Maud wouldn't have done that. You're right, Mum. Maud wouldn't have done that. So, and I love the character of Taggy, but she was so...
The daughter.
Yes, the daughter Taggy. But I always saw it through Maud's eyes.
Door!
After a cruise ship sank.
Door!
Hello. I just wanted to welcome you to...
Oh, sorry. Oh, no! No, thank you. We're not on the best of terms with Jehovah in this house. Taggy, just shut the door.
Oh, it's not mine. I found it on the lawn.
New English? Is it the New English Bible?
Yes. Daddy says it's a literary abomination. He must have thrown it out the window. I'm Lizzie. I live down the valley. I bought your bottle and some eggs.
We'll open this now.
Okay. Come on in.
We haven't found the wine glasses yet.
Time's the second poster. Oh, there isn't a second post.
Taggy lost her virginity this summer to one of her son Patrick's university friends. He's in the south of France right now and not writing many postcards.
Why? Oh, it must be so lonely for Rupert now he's not show jumping.
And the only thing that persuaded Caitlin to leave all her friends in London was the thought of living opposite Rupert Campbell Black.
I want him to ravish me.
He's a middle-aged MP, Caitlin.
Well, I'm so cross. I'm off to boarding school and won't get first crack at him. He's bound to fall for Taggy. Or even Mummy. How well do you know him?
I'm not sure anyone really knows Rupert. But we're friends.
So not carnally, then?
I'm one of the few women around here who hasn't been ravished by Rupert.
Is your husband fiercely protective?
Mm-hmm. Maud is a terrible mother. Like, she's really
She's not great.
Bad. She's not great. But she was a lot of fun.
What kind of wife is she? If you think, being married to Aidan Turner can't be that difficult. But now, he is Declan O'Hara, let's be very clear. It's, it's the two characters that are married.
Yes. As a wife, she is, again, kind of out of her time because she just does and says what she wants. It's all driven by an insecurity. She's so desperately in need of love and attention. She's a stage actress. She's been taken out of London. Her friends would give her attention. Her fans would give her attention. Being on the stage would give her attention. Declan revered her. And suddenly she's in the countryside and there's nobody there to tell her she's fantastic.
Right, I need a shirt and some fucking socks.
Oh, Daddy, that's Lizzie.
I live just down the valley.
She writes dirty books.
Nice to meet you, Caitlin, and you're wearing my socks.
Well, they're warmer than time. Sorry, still unpacking.
Thanks, love.
How easy is it to find help around here?
We are not forking out for a cleaner.
Well, stealing a woman's help around here is worse than stealing her husband.
What if you stole both?
That's Grant Tag. Right, I am going to buy 30 pairs of socks in such a disgusting colour that none of you will ever pinch them again. Nice to meet you, Lizzie.
Good luck, Daddy.
Give him hell.
Yeah. All right, let's get smashed.
So she kicks out. So as a wife, occasionally she wouldn't be great.
No.
But
no.
She does love him very much.
There's a lot of love between them and it is a complex relationship. However, when we get to the Ginny Cooper book, which you read in your teens, I can't believe it.
Don't tell people. This is just between you and me, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. Okay, I won't tell a single person.
Okay, good.
These were bunkbusters? This was the term that was used?
You know, yes, but remember, we didn't have the internet. Like, I learned lots. What can I tell you? There will always be the dog-eared pages.
Oh, specifics?
Oh, yeah, you know that. Yeah.
And did you go back and relook at them?
Well, I mean, if I admitted to that, I'd have to leave the country.
Research.
Yeah.
However, you know, there is that side. The treatment of women, let's face it, is appalling. Some of the women treat the men appallingly.
Yeah.
Sexual politics, very difficult from the standpoint of 2024.
Yes. It's funny, I was talking to my daughter about this, who's coming up for 20. She's like, oh my gosh, you can't say that, you couldn't do. And I said to her, well, the show deals with it with a really light touch and it allows you to question the morality and the misogyny and the sexism and the homophobia and all these different things. And Gilly deals with it with such a light touch, and I think we've done that as well, so that you can lean into it. But you can also, as I said to Evie, you can look and you go, well, yes, that is how it was in many ways. But aren't you lucky that the generations of women have changed that, pushed against it, so that you now can sit on your high horse, to, you know, if I want to be being a parent, and say, you know, you couldn't have done that. But that's the change-making that's happened.
But I'm thinking of a scene too, and I think it's the stud who says it at one point. Why is she worrying about having a career when she has those wonderful looks? She doesn't have to need to think about a career. It's extraordinary to hear, isn't it?
Couldn't you imagine getting away with that now? I mean, you'd be in terrible trouble. But it's a period drama. What we're doing now is, sadly, a period drama I remember being very much alive in. But, you know, it is, it's the 80s. It's a long time ago. And that's to my point of, that, you know, those eggs had to be broken to make the omelette you now get, to be able to say, you don't speak to me like that, Sonny.
The ensemble that is here is just extraordinary. You know, in Turner we've mentioned, David Tennant is in there, Danny Dyer.
Catherine Parkinson, Nafisa Williams. I mean, it's insane.
We could use my whole 7 minutes just listing off the names of the actors, and it'd be brilliant. But that ensemble seemed like an ensemble to me, because there are all these big set-piece parties where all of you are present.
And I tell you, it was a bizarre alchemy, that the way the producers put it together. We all turned up on set, and it was as if We all knew each other for donkey's years. And I think I was trying to work out how, because you know the drill, you turn up at a new job and you go, there's always an idiot. And if I can't spot who the idiot is, it means it's me. So I went home day one going, it's me. Day two, it's definitely me. And it turned out everybody was feeling the same way, going, I can't find the difficult one. But I think there was very much a sense of everybody took the work seriously, but not themselves. So we just laughed a lot.
And I believe there was lots of conversation. You all have difficult sex scenes to carry out and to do. I believe that was a real bonding moment for all of you because you practically all have them.
We all have them. And it's sort of also the whole tone of the piece is with joy and with heart and with love. And whether you're riding a horse or, oh, I see where I went there. Whether you're, sorry, I'm going to stop that sentence right there. If, you know, no matter what scene you were doing, whether it was a party scene or a sex scene or an emotional scene, there was an ease knowing that everybody was going through the same thing and we all trusted each other enormously. And also, it's heart, it's love, it's fun, it's joy. So what's the worst that can happen?
Victoria Smurfit, thank you so much for speaking to us on Arena.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, Victoria Smurfit there, who plays the character of Maud O'Hara in the new Disney Plus series Rivals, available to stream from today. And with me in studio right now, Jen Gannon and Chris Wasser for a weekly TV review slot. We'll get their views on Rivals shortly. We'll also be talking about a new season of Shrinking on Apple TV with Jason Segel as Jimmy, the psychotherapist who's mourning the death of his wife, and whose boss, Paul, is played by Harrison Ford. And we will talk about the latest iteration of Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's workplace comedy, The Office. Yes, there's another one. They're going down under this time. The Office Australia is coming our way on Prime Video. But let us go back to Rivals on Disney Plus. 1980s TV adaptation of Jenny Cooper's book, as we just heard Victoria Smurfit talking about. As she said in the midst of that interview, Chris, this is exactly what Jenny Cooper wrote on the page. It's not kind of trying to shy away from the bonkbuster aspect and from the difficult misogyny and sexism that's inherent in the book.
Yeah, it's modernising some aspects in terms of the role of the black female producer who Tony Baddingham brings over from London in the way that sometimes the
Nafisa Williams playing that character.
Nafisa Williams playing that character, Cameron Cork. Also the way that Maud's daughters talk to her about some things, certainly Taggy's attitudes towards some things are very sort of modern, but it wouldn't be a great show if it completely modernised itself. It has to stay true to the times. I mean, even sometimes you get Declan O'Hara. The first time we see Declan O'Hara grilling...
The Aidan Turner character
grilling a political heavyweight on television because he's coming from the BBC where he's interviewing politicians, and then when he goes to Cranium, they sort of design a talk show around him. He becomes a bit of a Parkinson character. But when he's first interviewing politicians, he's asking them questions that nobody else will, and they keep having to stop him because they say that you just can't talk to politicians like that. And his attitudes and, you know, and his morals, they are in line with, you know, attitudes and morals that Aidan Turner might have now in 2024. But that actually, I think that's nice. So there's a lovely blend of this is the way it was at the time, but, you know, the character's also questioning, it's not okay, you know?
Yeah, but if you go to watch episode one, right from the get-go,
I mean,
we're on Concord. Let's start
starting,
with that, Jen
you're
Gannon.
You're starting with Rupert Campbell Black joining the Mile High Club or renewing his membership. We don't know. Probably
I'd say
the latter.
He's a paid up full-time member.
With a willing journalist on Concord to the strains of, you know, I think it was Addicted to Love. Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love. So you know where you are.
Yeah, and the climactic moment of the scene, if I can describe it that way, is the breaking of the sound barrier. And the popping of the champagne bottle and it overflows. I mean, nothing left
subjects?
To the imagination. Yeah, it's all there on
it's
the
all
screen.
There. So we're back in this very gluttonous, overstuffed, over hairsprayed, oversexed era of excess. You're a slap bang in the middle of Thatcher's Britain and with this certain strata of society that are really on the take. And, you know, if you know Jenny Cooper's books, you know it's vulgar, but it's gloriously so. And this cast, as you're saying, this great ensemble cast, they are having really good fun with this, but the important thing is the acting is so good in Rivals is because they're treating this extremely seriously. So it comes across on the screen as a great drama in that way.
Yeah, because you do get the backstory. It doesn't. Now we're not talking serious Chekhovian drama, but you get it digs down into the backstories of the characters and maybe why they are behaving the way they're behaving, Chris.
Yeah, and also it allows you know these primetime award winning performers like David Tennant and various others to kind of share the stage with like these daytime daytime soap opera actors that you wouldn't usually think much of. Maybe Danny Dyer, for instance, who is surprisingly good in this. So they're all on a level playing field. And as Jen was saying there, it is trash and it knows that it's trash, but it's enjoyable trash. It's very well made. It's compelling viewing. And I think also something that makes it a must watch is the fact that it takes this more is more approach to the storytelling. It never allows itself to be boring. There's always something happening. There's always a boisterous dinner party, a New Year's Eve party. There's always something.
Stars from you, Chris?
At the beginning, I thought 3 stars, but the more that you get into it, the more I loved it. So I'm going to say 4.
You're heading to 4. There you go. Yeah. And standout performances, because it's a huge ensemble cast.
I think Aidan Turner is fantastic. I think David Tennant really brings something to his character as the TV boss, because he could just be the swaggering, cigar-chomping villain, but there's something to him. There's a real darker edge to him, and as it goes on, it becomes a lot darker. I think there is a grotty underbelly to this, where you're trying to talk about sexism and racism, but also I think it does something so well done that Emerald Fennell could not do with Saltburn. It really gets into the minutiae of the class system in the UK in such a brilliant, detailed way, and it's such a lot of fun. It
I didn't think Saltburn and Saltburn and Rivals would be in the same breath, but there
well, it's much better than Saltburn, I can tell you that much.
I think I spoke over your 4 stars.
4 stars.
Okay, let us move on then to number two this evening. Number two this evening, which is Shrinking, the second episode, second season rather. Ted Lasso team give us a 40-something grieving widower and psychotherapist, played by Jason Segal. This is Jimmy, who starts acting out unethical methods in his therapy and in his own life. His grumpy mentor, Dr. Paul Rhodes, played by Harrison Ford. Again, a star-studded cast, but particularly those two heading this cast. That's kind of what holds it, I think, really into, makes it into something special.
Yeah, Chris? That's it. Yeah, whatever you think of Jason Segel, I mean, he is a sitcom star based on his time off in How I Met Your Mother. And then you've got Harrison Ford, who's breaking his one project or one movie a year rule to star in this. And he said that before, that he already had something lined up for 2022 when they shot the first season, but he read the script of this that was provided by Bill Lawrence and Breck Goldstein and Jason Segel, who's a co-creator, and he said, I want to do this. And the story at the beginning was very simple. You have this therapist who's lost his wife in a road accident. He's falling apart. I mean, he's at the point where he's throwing these, you know, drug-fueled pool parties in the middle of the week, you know, and his neighbours, who are very nosy but also very caring, they sort of intervene. They say, you need to sort yourself out. But he can't fix himself. So instead, he gets this idea into his head that he can fix, in inverted commas, his clients and his patients. And he starts telling them what to do, interfering with their lives. So season one ended with this on this disastrous note, where he seemed to have finally found some inner peace. He has this lovely relationship with his boss, who, you know, the boss, the mentor figure, Paul, played by Harrison Ford, he pretends to be this grouchy villain, but really he's a father figure for him. But the season ended with Jimmy, he made a joke to one of his clients about pushing her husband, who's quite abusive, off a cliff. He didn't expect Grace Heidi Gardner to actually follow through on this, so we're starting from there in season two.
And an added complication here is the fact that Jimmy, the Jason Segel character, has been involved with his now dead wife's best friend.
Yeah, Gabby, who's played by the great Jessica Williams, who people know from Two Dope Queens and the incredible Jessica James on Netflix. She's a really good actor, but I think so. You're delving deeper into the characters' lives, and my problem here is the fact that it's the Ted Lasso problem. I think that's what we're going to call it, because season one of Ted Lasso, I think everybody was so intrigued and delighted to have this very gentle, kind sitcom. And then by season two, it kind of had gotten very treacly, very quickly. And I think with season one, maybe, of Shrinking, it was that little bit spiky, a little bit gritty, a little bit edgy. There's a darkness about it that people enjoyed, about like the PTSD of Jimmy's character. But now it's gotten into this very kind, sweet, almost saccharine zone that I just,
you were disappointed.
It was very greeting card humour for me. All those things that are supposed to be problems seem to be resolved quite quickly, I think, in this season, that just didn't do it for me.
Let's listen to a clip. The character of Paul, the grumpy boss, played by Harrison Ford, is confronted by Liz, who's the busybody neighbour that you've been talking about, played by Krista Miller. She's also a pal of Gabby, who works in the office and is having the affair with Jimmy, played by Jason Segel. Bit of strong language in the midst of this clip, but a great temper from Krista Miller as Leah.
We need to talk.
Oh, first you raw dog me in public, then now you burst into my office and raw dog me here.
Stop saying raw dog.
I can say anything I want.
Tell him what raw dog means.
Sex without a condom.
Then I'll stop saying that.
Gabby asked you for a recommendation and you couldn't be bothered to write it yourself? Mm-hmm. I've got bad news, dude. I gave her a rock.
A rock? And in your mind, that makes sense.
You're being a lazy, ungrateful prick. And Jimmy thinks so, too.
Do you think I'm being a lazy, ungrateful prick?
Mm-hmm.
Pussy!
Fair.
He's just being quiet because you hugged.
You told her about our hug.
Look, you and I got to work together for like 5 years before Gabby even got here, and I appreciate all the guidance you give me. But you don't give Gabby that kind of time. And even still, she's always looking out for you. She gave you that water bottle.
To keep you fucking hydrated.
She drives you to work.
To and fro every goddamn day.
Listen, Paul, you know what I'm gonna say. You're being...
an arrogant, sexist piece of shit. Fix it. Pussy!
What kind of a person hugs and tells? I know.
There you go, Harrison Ford, Krista Miller and Jason Segel in a scene from season two of Shrinking. And he says in the midst of that clip, I can say anything I want, Harrison Ford. He can more or less do anything he wants here. He curls his lip a millimetre to the right and it's like a Shakespearean speech.
Oh, he can do anything he wants. He's Harrison Ford. He gets away with it in my book. He had a good line in the first season where he described grief as a crafty little effort. And I just thought, that's a lovely line. And it's also, you could apply it to this show. Because
I think you're happier with season two than Jen is.
Yeah, I think so. Because this show, it does, it's full of, in block capitals, important life lessons. Mm. But it somehow charmed me the whole way through. And it, there was always a great punchline around the corner. There was always a lovely, tender moment between Harrison Ford's Paul and his new partner, or Harrison Ford's Paul and Gabby. I just found it so sweet. And I just think it is very obviously a very nice show, the same way Ted Lasso was at the beginning before it annoyed us all. And I'm okay with that. Like, I think I was I think I was looking for something to be charmed by and to laugh at this week, and this succeeded.
Did you laugh and cry, or were you annoyed too quickly, Jen? Actually, give me your stars as well.
Okay, I think, you know, you have all these complex storylines and complex characters, but there's this overriding feeling for me that they don't know what to do with them. And I really fear it's being renewed for season three, and I really fear that they don't know where they're going with this show per se. And I think if you want something that's a very heartwarming and life-affirming comedy, I would reach for Somebody Somewhere instead, which we're getting a season three off soon, which is its final season, but it's much superior, much more rounded characters, I think. For me, this would be, I suppose, a 2.5 to 3.
2.5 to 3. Yeah, I think you're in a better place than that, are you?
Probably,
Chris?
Yeah. I'd say the storytelling's a little looser, a little clumsier at times, but it's Ford's performance and also Jessica Williams that's keeping me there. So I would actually welcome a season three. So 3.5 stars, I think.
3.5 from Chris for Shrinking season two. Finally, then, The Office Australia. I'm sure my question is within that tone. Do we need another office anywhere?
No. The answer to that is no. And look, listen, I have nothing against Australian comedy. We have seen Kath and Kim. We know how genius it is. We've seen Colin from Accounts. We know who Sam Campbell is. He's a genius. But like, you know, they have their own unique perspective on the world. Why do we need this version, this take, this very self-conscious take, I think, on The Office? I feel that one of the main things that made The Office, the original UK version, and less so maybe the Biden American version work was it's about the hubris of a certain kind of man.
And that moment when we all tuned into it back in the day and thought, is this an actual
documentary?
What is it?
Like, it's about a mediocre corporate shill who keeps on managing to fail upwards, but it's a very particular type of man, and somehow, you know, you end up enjoying their idiocy in a way. With this, there is absolutely no surprises, even though they've gender swapped the roles.
And so we have a female
Felicity
boss.
Felicity Ward as the female David Brent, like Hannah Howard. So she's the manager of this Sydney-based box company.
And let's listen to the moment. It's practically the first scene when the head, the Alicia boss from the big head office, comes down and breaks the news to Felicity Ward's character Hannah that now it's not that they're going to downsize, it's that they're going to all just work remotely from home. They don't need to have any offices.
As you know, Hannah, we've been looking at attendance across the branches.
Well, you certainly don't need to worry about numbers here.
Is that Johnny from the warehouse?
No. What? You know what? Well, I can see the resemblance, but no, that's not him.
Well, we've reviewed our flexible work practices, and given the low attendance rates, Flinley Craddock can no longer justify the cost of our office spaces.
Yeah.
We're going to close the regional branches and everyone will go remote.
What?
Well, the warehouse will still stay open. Everyone else will work from home.
Those people out there are like family to me, and I won't let you throw them out on the street.
No one is going out on the street, Hannah. They're just going home.
Do you think we can run Australia's fourth largest packaging company from the isolation of our own homes? We can't!
Fourth largest packing company in Australia. Neither of you are smiling. I got a few smiles out of it, I have to say. Mm. And I did wonder if you're Australian, perhaps, which I'm not, but will it give something new to an Australian audience?
I don't think so. You just mentioned Kath and Kim there, Jen. Mm. And I mean, like, that makes me want to go back and watch that. That's a proper Australian comedy. And viewers in Australia would have had the English version and the American version,
yeah,
which were huge international hits. This just feels like a very poor adaptation of a play you used to love. Yes. And all of the pieces are in the wrong place, and all the players are just trying to copy what far more talented people already did. It's just empty, and the only idea I think it has is that gender flip role, and that doesn't even work.
Stars?
I will give, I mean, it's a 4-star performance from Felicity Ward, because she is doing everything she can.
Who's the David Brent? The David Brent character,
but
is, yeah.
The more noise she makes, the more it becomes apparent that, you know, she doesn't really have that great material to work with, basically. Right. So it is quite flat, it is quite pointless. It's 2 stars.
Jen?
I'm going to give 1 star for, like, I just think all the cringe has gone out of the office now. We need to think of new ideas. Like, if you can predict where all the jokes are coming from, you know what this is about.
And we know it's not a mockumentary.
Exactly. We know Tim and Don are going to get together. It's pointless. Yeah. Sorry, spoiler alert for 20 years ago.
Okay. So pretty low, 2 and 1 star, respectively, yeah, from Jen, from Chris and Jen there. Jen Gannon, Chris Wasser, reviewing your TV highlights this week. Rivals is available to stream on Disney Plus from today. Shrinking Season 2 is on Apple TV Plus, and The Office Australia is available on Prime Video. Oh, a busy week for album releases this evening. We have 4 brand new LPs, if I can call them that, to listen to: Kylie Minogue, Maverick Saber, The Blessed Madonna, and Houseplants. Kylie Minogue follows up last year's Tension with the very inventively named Tension 2, a strictly electronic and dance-orientated sequel. The aforementioned The Blessed Madonna is part of that as well. She is also the Chicago house music stalwart and DJ who gives us her highly anticipated debut album, Godspeed. Houseplants, duo consisting of BellX1's Paul Noonan and producer Doughy, give us a fresh perspective on their debut album, which is called Dry Goods. And finally, Maverick Saber, the Irish singer-songwriter, returns with Burn the Right Things Down, his 5th album. With me in studio, Kellyanne Byrne and Pat Carty. Let's get our hot pants on and head out on the floor with Kylie, with a track called Dance Alone. So you're hot pants by yourself. This features Sia. There we go. Dance Alone featuring Sia from Kylie's new album, Tension 2. Kellyanne Byrne and Pat Carty, as I said, are our 2 reviewers this evening. Dance floor focus, no doubt about that in this one, Kellyanne.
Yeah.
So it's what was done on Tension, mm-hmm, last year's album. And it does, that's a kind of a hark back to things like Disco or Fever from earlier in Kylie's career, isn't it?
Yeah, like Tension came out last year and that was a bit sort of more synth pop, R&B. She was even rapping on one track actually on that album. And this album is entirely, it's Kylie Minogue in Clubland. Every single track is focused on the dance floor. So it's kind of, it's very much one pace, but I think it's probably what she does best, which is dance pop records. And she has a great understanding of pop music. And she just seems to be in this kind of era. If you watch the video of Edge of Saturday Night with Blessed Madonna, where she's partying in the club, and she's just in this era where I think that is her focus.
Yeah, and that dance floor, it's always been there really, Pat, as part of Kylie Minogue. So you're getting what you expect here. Did you want something more? Are we happy enough that she's been Kylie and get on with
I like Kylie being Kylie. And if she's listening, if she ever needs anyone to buy her a cup of tea and a sandwich, she can give me a shout anytime she likes.
She shouldn't be out dancing alone, is
what you're saying.
Dance, well, strange enough, Dance
I'm
Alone.
I'm sure she's got offers.
I thought that Dance Alone that you just played there. I think that's maybe there's one other one. Maybe that's the strongest thing on the album with Sia. It's the one that kind of reminds me that they would most likely sit with her classic singles. And you know what I'm talking about, the really good stuff there that everybody loves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what you're saying about the pace, there is a slight change of pace the odd time. The very last song on it is called Shoulda Left You, which is this kind of slower kind of groove, and it's kind of got an 80s feel to it. That's pretty good. There's another one, Dance to the Music, I thought was kind of like Daft Punk a bit.
Yeah. I think Taboo is going to be really popular.
70s disco strings, maybe. Yeah. I have written down here on Good Is Gone. The track with the Blessed Madonna, and we'll come to that when we're talking about Blessed Madonna.
Yeah, I love that.
I didn't really care for that.
I'm not going to play that track because we're going to play two tracks. I think there's a kind of Blessed Madonna.
You know, would it be in Tension 2 and a follow-up to it? I think what happened there, they were going to release Tension, or re-release Tension with extra tracks, and she was kind of checking it out and said, oh, I might get another album out of this, you know, and all this. And it sometimes feels like that. Sometimes feels
right,
a bit thrown together.
All right, she has stretched a bit. And I know you both saw her at Electric Picnic.
I saw her. Yeah, were you there?
Oh, sorry, I thought
AC/DC were in Dublin, I'm afraid. I was at that.
Yeah. She was unbelievable.
Yeah,
she was. It was
is
outstanding.
That energy here? Is that energy on this? On
yeah,
this record?
Absolutely. I mean, she's 56 now, and she's in her prime. I've so much admiration for her, and that performance at EP was outstanding.
Stars from you on this one, Kellyanne?
3, I'd give it.
Fairly solid 3. Pat?
2.5, 3.
You're coming around to that.
We didn't get much time with it, so
you would have liked a little bit more time for listening. Sometimes they come late, that is for sure. All right, that's Kylie and Tension 2. Now, I mentioned that the Blessed Madonna is on the album and on the track Edge of Saturday Night, but we're going to play 2 of her tracks, so we will stick with that. Who is she, first of all? Explain who we're talking about, Kylie Ann. Wonderful Freudian slip.
Well, I'd love that. Blessed Madonna, real name Maria Stamper, and she's been DJing 30 plus years. Got into production. I mean, now she's a superstar DJ. She's DJ extraordinaire. But got into production later in life. One of her biggest records came out in 2016, and that was called He Is The Voice I Hear. And it was so classy and slick. It was like an MFSB, Cerrone, Gino Socio record. Every DJ was playing it. And I think that was where her production kind of thing started. She's since remixed Dua Lipa, and this is her first album. It's called Godspeed.
All right, and let's have a listen to a track on that called Mercy, featuring Jacob Lusk. There we go, Mercy featuring Jacob Lusk, which comes straight out of a song ahead of it called Mercy the Welcome, also featuring Jacob Lusk. I was kind of wondering why there were two separate songs. However, this is kind of dance floor stuff as well, but a slightly different nature, something a little bit more 2024, Pat?
2024, I don't know about that. It's like we were just saying just while that record was playing, Kellyanne very... cleverly pointed out that, you know, that sounds like Sylvester from the 70s. I mean, that, now, you know, without, let's call it spade a spade, that's campered in the back room of Amara's there. That's, you know, that's campered in several rows of tents. Not that that doesn't make it good. Your man, Jacob Lusk, is in the, what's the name of that band?
Gabriels,
yeah.
Unbelievable band.
I've seen them live and they're great, and he's got a fantastic voice.
Yes.
Not all of this record agreed with me quite as much as that. Now, the first song that came on, Somebody's Daughter, as I was saying to Kellyanne outside, if they played that at top volume in Guantanamo, I'd give them all my secrets straight away. You know, I mean, it just didn't really.
Yeah, I
do
put
much
down industrial scratch.
Industrial disco, is that it? But then the second half of the record does get better. There is songs like Back to Love, which I thought, is Shuffle House a thing, Kellyanne? You're the disco expert.
Shuffle House.
That was the term I've come up with there.
And also, towards the back end of the album, we played it last night, was the brand new, which features James Vincent.
That's very good. Very good.
We played that on the programme last night. But Kellyanne, it's a 24-track album, but to be fair, 6 or 7 interludes, I think. But you're still talking 17 or 18 tracks there. It's a big ask, and they're all kind of quite similar, aren't
they? It's a big ask, as you say, and I agree, it starts out with the kind of dirtier, underground sort of industrial stuff, but I loved this record because it's her homage to dance music, and, you know, nobody probably has a better understanding of it than her. She moved to Chicago when she was a teenager. She was badly bullied at school, left home, moved there, immersed herself in the house music scene. And I think she has a great understanding of house, techno, soulful house, classic house. And I really liked the record. I know what you're saying, it's 24 tracks, but there's so much good stuff in it.
Yeah, all right. I think we'll stick with that for the Blessed Madonna and Godspeed. Stars from you, Kelly?
I give it 4. I loved it.
A solid 4? Yeah. She would, Pat. Fair enough. Clearly wouldn't. What are you going to give it?
I'm going to sit on the fence as much as I can and give it 2.5. It gets better towards the end, but there's a lot of it there, and it is very repetitive. And I know that's the point of dance music, and I know I'm sitting beside one of the country's great experts in dance music, so it's a bit silly me saying that. So 2.5 out of 5.
2.5 out of 5. That's the Blessed Madonna, Godspeed, and we've also spoken about Kelly Tension too. We'll be back shortly with Houseplants and Maverick Sale. All right, let us move on to the second two of our 4 albums this evening, the Blessed Maverick Sabre, Burn the Right Things Down, and right now we're going to listen to Houseplants and Half Known Things. This of course is the collaboration between Bob Dahi and
Paul Noonan.
Paul Noonan, thank you, of Bell X1, and they will be our musical guests on the Dublin Book Festival show on November the 6th. Really looking forward to that. Let's have a listen to a song from the new album called My Love, My Umbrella.
In the rain, I leaned in and kissed you on the throat. You just smiled and fixed the color of your coat. In the rain,
My Love, My Umbrella, the title of that track from Houseplants and Half Known Things. Paul Noonan of Bell X1 and the DJ and our electronic
producer
artist Dahi are the two people involved here. These are musicians, Kellyanne. Every track I listen to, they're full of integrity.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved this album because I felt like every time I went back to it, it grew on me more and more and more. And every single song, I was so interested in the sounds that were in it. I loved the way some of them had a sparse intro and then it dropped into like this big electro track. And I just really thought the musicianship was outstanding. But it had real lyrical depth too, you know. And that track that you just played there for me had a Leonard Cohen vibe.
Yeah, there are times when this is, and because we're coming out of two big dance albums, I suppose, in some ways, Pat.
My favourites, yeah.
Yeah. there was
you need times, to go clubbing, Pop.
There was times to sit back and be a bit more reflective with this album.
You
want to sit down and listen to it, I think.
Well, Paul Noonan, I think, has said, or maybe it was Dahi, has said a few times, you know, that they're making this music for 2 a.m. festival slots or for dancing. Yeah. It's music for dancing. But I think they're actually better when they kind of pull it back a bit from the dance floor. And like that song we just heard there, kind of, to use a phrase that doesn't really fit, kind of chill out music, if you like. I think they're better at that. Like there's one particular song on this that stood out to me, a thing called Hope is a Hell of a Drug, which sounds great, which is about, as far as I can make out, it's Nikola Tesla that it's about.
Yeah, I wondered about this track, because it was so poetic. I wonder what the lyrics were about.
There's another one, the first one that came out, which is No Pushover, which I wasn't crazy about, talks about Elon Musk. It talks about Elon Musk talking about, wait for this now, that all existence is a simulation engineered by an advanced
artificial intelligence. Yeah.
And he talks about this in the hot tub. And I was listening to this going, could you imagine, is it possible to imagine a worse place on earth to take a bath than in a hot tub with Elon Musk? Anyway, that was one of the things that was on it.
Yes, I'm putting that thought immediately out of my head. But what we're getting from the two of them here really is, I think, this introspective and reflective style. But you were saying in terms of that track that we've just heard, My Love, My Umbrella, there's a female voice that comes in towards the end of it that really adds to it.
Yeah.
It's a long track, 4.5 minutes. We don't have time for all of it.
Yeah. I think we should especially mention Sinead White, who does backing vocals throughout the album. And I think her vocal on that track, which we didn't get to hear, is absolutely stunning and compliments Paul Noonan's. But, you know, there are a lot of great musicians on the album. They're both obviously great. I mean, Dahi is outstanding. I've seen him. Yeah. I've never seen them together, but I've seen Dahi on his own. And he's outstanding live. And I thought it was a beautiful record and like just really short and concise and just a wonderful listen.
Right. Stars from you on that one, Kelly?
I gave it 4. I loved it.
4. And Pat?
I give it 3. It's just not particularly my my cup of tea. But I can, I'm not dumb enough to be not be able to tell that there's some really good stuff on it.
All right. So. And if you want to see them together November the 6th, Dublin Book Festival, they will be our house band.
And they're touring all over Dublin, or Ireland.
I did say the Dublin
Strange
Book
enough,
Festival.
I'm doing an event at the Dublin Book Festival. Just let me throw it in there. Well, you can find it at dublinbookfestival.ie or whatever it is.
.com, and you can check out our gig there too. What did we do? We said four and three. Okay, let us move on to our final fourth album this evening. Wexford Man Maverick Sabre returns with Burn the Right Things Down. Here's a track that you both were very keen that I would play called Lay Down On Me. There you go. Burn the Right Things Down, Maverick Sabre. It's so soulful, that track that we've listened to, Lay Down On Me. And we were debating and wondering about his age. Who are we talking about, first of all, Pat, when we talk about Maverick Sabre? And what age is he?
What age is he? Born in 1990. Christened Michael Stafford, I've written down here. Born in Hackney, but he moved to New Ross when he was about four. And then later on was advised and persuaded to move back to London to pursue a music career. Now, he's been making music himself since 2010. I think his first thing came out there. You know, he's had chart success in England. I remember a duet he did with the great reggae star Chronix, which was on his 2019 album When I Wake Up. This is album number 5. There were 3 singles came out before it, and that one that we just heard is number 3, and I think that is by far the best song on any of the records we've listened
there
to.
There you go. And it's so soulful. I mean, you would, if when you hear that he's London and New Ross, you think, no, sure, he must have grown up with gospel music all around him.
It sounds like something that would have been recorded in Muscle Shoals. It sounds like an Aretha or a Sam Cooke track. I think it's easily the best song he's ever written. So beautiful.
Across that whatever, nearly 20, whatever it is, for 15 years of songwriting. What is it about his voice? Because I think that's all overdubbed, the track that we just heard. It's all him, isn't it?
Well, we were saying that. I think so.
I think he's one of these kind of guys you'd be doing. Because that kind of technique is all across this record, you know? And the thing about his voice as well is that, and that's maybe a good thing. I thought it was a bad thing when I put it on. I couldn't really make out, not on that particular song, but on a lot of other songs, it's hard to make out what he's singing about. And when you listen to this record, first of all, at least that was my impression, I thought this is a bit of a mess. But spending time with it, it starts to swim into focus, and it's kind of one of those things. And I think it's one of those things that's going to get better and better the more you listen.
It's more expansive musically than his other stuff, I think.
There's another lovely track called Lonely People, but I want to just play a little snippet of something that has a bit more upbeat feel to it. Yeah, No Better. Yeah.
Really, I've been better without you.
There you go. No Better from Maverick Sabre and Burn the Right Things Down, proving that it doesn't have to be all soulful and gospel. No. He has more strings to his bow than that, Kellyanne.
Yeah, well, that's got a Northern Soul beat. For me, that was one of the standout tracks on the album. Yeah. But myself and Pat were saying early before we came in, it's musically, it's more expansive than his other records, because I got some Stone Roses,
Beastie Boys, Primal Scream.
Right, lots of influences in there. Stars from you on this one, Kellyanne.
I gave it 4, I loved it.
Solid 4, Pat?
Yeah, 4 as well. I just think it's very very adventurous. It might not be the greatest record of all time, but it's really adventurous in the production and the arrangements. And even those 2 songs might even give the wrong impression, because there's lots of different things going on.
Yeah, lots of different things going on.
Can we mention 2 other Irish records very quickly?
Yeah.
You've got 2 seconds.
Right, you've got Sack, have got and Wake Up People and Silverbacks, 2 great records. We were so spoiled this week we couldn't find room.
Well, you had to do 4.
But going by tomorrow.
Certainly
folks.
Couldn't have done 6. Maverick Sabre, Burn the Right Things Down, Godspeed, The Blessed Madonna, Half Known Things, Houseplants, Tension 2, Kylie were the 4 albums that we were speaking about with Pat Carty and Kellyanne Byrne. And that is our lot for this Friday evening for this week here on Arena. Paula Shields and Leah Murphy researched. Solly Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator. Liam Mullen was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Kay Sheehy. Back with you Monday, 7 o'clock here on RT Radio 1. John Creedon will be with you after the news.